Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
It is time for Movies and Booze. We're joined in the studio by Serena Bellissimo, Olivia Fahey and Linda Coogan. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Okay, let's start with you, Linda. What have you got there? You've been practicing your pronunciation, so all the native Italian speakers out there, get ready.
Yeah. Ciao da frati, eh? Lugana.
Okay. It was like we're there. Yeah.
I have got two gorgeous wines that I think are amazing for any time you're entertaining, that you don't know what you're going to have or if you're going to someone's house. So it is a Lugana, an Italian white, that is just a real crowd-pleasing style. And it's a very fancy bottle, isn't it, Olivia?
It's
you're
gorgeous.
Like, that's gorgeous. And I know you shouldn't buy based in a bottle, but what's inside really is beautiful juice. And one of my favourite Spanish wineries in Rioja. Do you like that as well? Not
yep,
Rioja.
Very
Rioja.
Good, yeah.
Bodegas Navajas. How about that, people?
Yeah.
How about that? Not Navajas. Navajas. So it is
a Navajas there, will you?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So Rioja Reserva, and it's absolutely stunning. You're going to love these two. I know you are.
Okay, lovely. And our two movies today. Now, the football one, Olivia, seems very niche, let's put it that way. It's not just an Irish movie. It's an Irish movie about someone playing Shamrock Rovers. Is that the gist of it?
And then there's some, bad betting going on as well. So there's like a police investigation and all sorts of things. So yeah, Fran the Man, new Irish film. I want to support Irish films, so
yes,
I'm going to try and pick my words very carefully. But this kind of sets Irish film back about 20 years, I think, in terms
wow,
of
wow, what would you have said
level.
If you hadn't chosen your words carefully?
Ask me after the two glasses of
yeah.
wine. But yeah, unfortunately, it was slightly on the disappointing side, but we can get into more details on that in a moment.
Oh, God. And the amateur, is this just like somebody going around shooting people?
Not even shooting people, because he's a terrible shot. So he actually comes up with different ways to kind of get his revenge on the people who murdered his wife. So this is the new film with starring Rami Malek and Lawrence Fishburne. And it's espionage as opposed to spy action thriller. It does have action, but it definitely leans more into the kind of intelligence side of things,
okay.
Which makes it a bit more interesting. Not perfect, but definitely better than Fran the Man.
Okay, but that's really damning with faint praise there. Wow. Okay, better than Fran the Man. Okay. So, like, all these people from The Crown, Serena, are now going to be in Pride and Prejudice. Is that because, like, they already know they have the outfits that fit them, so they might as well just bung them all in there?
Possibly. Possibly. And look, it's Netflix, so they've all worked for Netflix before. They may as well work for Netflix. Again, a lot of people are going, really? Do we need another Pride and Prejudice? I'm probably one of the very few people that hasn't seen the movie and hasn't seen the TV series. So I'm actually...
Here have I.
Thank you. So there's two of us. I'm actually looking forward to this one. I haven't read the books either.
Okay, no spoilers.
This is actually written by Dolly Alderton. And
okay.
I just think they say she's going to remain faithful to the books. So I think that's how it's going to be a little bit different. And the casting, we were talking about casting, I never told you who's in it. Emma Corrin, who played Diana in The Crown, and Olivia Colman, who also played the Queen in The Crown. And they're starring as Elizabeth Bennet and Mrs. Bennet. I'm assuming they're mother and daughter in Pride and Prejudice. Yeah. And Jack Lowden is cast as Mr. Darcy. If you're a Slow Horses fan.
He's Mr. Saoirse Ronan.
He's Mr. Saoirse Ronan, and he's also in Slow Horses. So he's playing Mr. Darcy. Does Mr. Darcy go out with Elizabeth Bennet?
Yes.
Oh, there you go. So they're the three main stars that have been cast.
I could see him as a Mr. Darcy, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's Colin Firth, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Colin Firth, essentially. Like in Slow Horses, he's the only character who washes from the look of it.
And there's all I know about Pride and Prejudice is there's this scene where Mr. Darcy comes out of the water, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in the book.
Who cares?
Yeah. He emerges
that's
from
a great
the water.
Scene.
Is that not the James Bond film?
And the Bridget
in his
Jones
shorts.
Film.
Yeah.
And in Bridgerton as well.
Yeah. Okay, right. Okay, well, now that might necessarily be a bad thing because I suppose any movie of Pride and Prejudice would have had to truncate the story, shorten down the story a bit. So This is maybe the whole thing.
Exactly. And do you know what we always say? And I am sick to death of reboots, but not when I haven't seen it in the first place. So there's
yes.
a lot of people who haven't seen it. So this could actually entice a whole new audience.
It's brand new information. That's great.
We'll go together.
Yes. So there's going to be this documentary about Jane Mansfield.
Yeah.
Which might or may not be really, really interesting, depending on what approach they take, I suppose.
I cannot wait. Every time I hear this news, I am surprised. And then I remind myself, you know this news already.
Okay.
Mariska Hargitay, who a lot of people will know from Law & Order SVU, is Jane Mansfield's daughter.
Now, I must say, I didn't know that
at all. Are you sure you didn't know that?
Maybe I did.
Yeah. It's because every time I see him, I'm just like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Actually, you know this news. But what has happened is, for the first time ever, she's actually going to do a documentary on her mother. Her mother died when she was 2 or 3. And
it was in the car when she died.
I had no idea that she was in the car when she died.
Yeah.
So she was asleep in the back seat. Her mother was only 37, didn't really know her mother. And she was like, this is a way that I can maybe get to know my mother and get some answers. And we can all see Jane Mansfield in a different way, because we all sort of know her. Even if you don't know who she is, she's sort of the pinup actress, you know, the alternative to Marilyn Monroe. So now we get to find out a bit more, while Mariska is also finding out a bit more, which I think could make it even more interesting for us as a viewer. So that is coming to HBO in June. HBO usually comes over to us on Sky or Now TV. So I'm hoping that might be coming over to us in June on one of those platforms as well.
Yeah, because, yeah, Mansfield was almost exclusively marketed as, here's a woman in a bikini with big boobs and blonde hair.
Exactly. And it's really interesting, because Mariska's career was completely different. The serious Olivia Benson. Mm. So it's just interesting to see if she can also find some similarities between her and her mother.
Yeah. Right, so tell us about our first wine, Linda.
So our first wine is from the Lugana region. So people actually think that Lugana is a grape, or to be honest, people don't really know that much about Italian wine, I think, because there's over 1,000 native Italian grapes that you don't see anywhere else. So Lugana is actually the place. The grape is called, and it's quite unusual because usually the grape is Trebbiano, that's found in Lugana. This is a little bit different. It's Turbiana, Turbiana. So 100% of this native grape found in this vineyard. And the vines are old. They're between 10 and 35 years old. So there's a little bit more concentration gone into the producing the grapes from these vines. The soils are it's near Lake Garda. So you've got this coastal influence. So the wine has spent 6 months, the grape skins with the must, the grapes and the juice, 6 months in a tank to stir them up to give some texture to the wine. So it's not just one dimensional. There's layers to this. This is why I think it's a real crowd pleasing style for a dinner party if you're coming with something a bit fancy. For me, a seafood platter, think coastal, think something like that. Grilled fish, if you're having gorgeous starches like that, or a simple chicken risotto or any kind of seafood pasta. Oh my God. Like, for me, this is just, and it just feels a little bit elegant as well. It's so fresh, but there's a salinity, a saline note to it as well. That's why it will work really well with seafood. I know the bottle is like fancy looking.
Yes.
It is fancy. Gorgeous, gorgeous bottle. And they do a rosé as well that is just, I mean, these make me feel that I'm having a really elegant glass of wine that, you know, if I gave that to someone as a gift, you know, or they brought it to me, I'd be so happy. People say, what can you ever buy you, Linda? You can buy me a bottle of this, no problem. Yeah. It is widely available throughout
the country. Or diamonds, if you're wearing.
Or diamonds, that would be nice. Yeah, no diamonds, that'd be lovely. So this is widely available. It is in 64 Wines, Bradley's in Cork, Drink Store Stony Batter, Jus de Vin Portmarnock, Whelehan's, Corkscrew and Wine Online. So it's widely available. Lots of independents really like this wine, as it's a staple kind of classic wine.
Yeah. And as you say, it's a kind of a grape people wouldn't be familiar with at all, really.
No. So Lugana, you can get inexpensive ones in supermarkets, and Trebbiano is a bit of a boring grape. So this version with this new-ish grape from there, Turbiana, is just fab. Do you like it? Do you like this kind of citrus?
No, it's because it's like, it's not overdoing it on the sweetness as a lot of them tend to do.
There's no oak or anything like that. It's just real fresh, but it has layers to it, and it keeps going on and on. The flavours are going to last there till the next segment.
Okay, good one. just watched 1883, fantastic show about I don't know. I've never heard of that.
Oh, that's one of the Yellowstone spin-offs.
Oh, right. Okay. That's that's television. This is movies and booze. The name's in the, you know, the hint's in the title. The critics on The Hard Shoulder said Fran the Man was good. That wasn't you, sorry. No,
it wasn't me. That no, was okay. John. Look at me throwing him under the...
Yeah, right.
It was John Fart. He didn't say it was good. He said it has a great cast.
He said it has a great cast.
A great cast. It was fun.
Yeah.
He never said it was bad, but he didn't say it was excellent.
Okay. Okay.
Very diplomatic.
Great cast. Catering truck was fantastic. Okay. So I really want you to do your review of Fran the Man now.
You do? Okay, let's go
okay.
for it.
Major beef with John Fardy coming up after this.
Are you single, Fran?
Depends which one of you is asking.
We know what a manager does, Fran, but what exactly does an assistant manager do?
What don't they do is probably an easier question to answer.
The butcher slices it.
What's the story of the camera crew?
They're making a movie about me.
A reboot of the 40-year-old version, is it?
Can you bring us back to the first time you met Fran Costello?
We've had a tip-off from Interpol.
They're a team from Cyprus, aren't they?
There you go. That's Fran the Man. And I must say to you now, you have to take your head out of your hands or the microphone won't pick you up, Olivia. So who is Fran Costello? I suppose, is that a good starting point? Is it about Fran Costello?
Fran is the assistant manager for this team that basically, like, they're all amateur footballers. None of them get paid. It's just they kind of do it for the fun of it. And somehow they've been drawn in the FA Cup final with... Shamrock Rovers, so they have like a really big task ahead of them.
Yeah,
and he's very, very passionate about it. You've got Ardal O'Hanlon, who actually plays the actual gaffer, but he seems a bit more lackadaisical, not really as involved. Fran really is the man when it comes to what goes on the field, and yeah, he ends up getting kind of embroiled in this betting scam that the police ask him to help investigate, because clearly someone on the team is kind of tipping it off that they're going to lose 5-0 in this absolutely massive match, because all of the bets coming from the Middle East where, you know, you don't expect them to be interested in Irish football.
Yeah.
They're basically starting to have all of these bets come in from that far away, and it's raising a few red flags. So that's kind of the premise there for it. You kind of heard there to be like, oh, are you single, Fran? That's kind of in relation to Amy Huberman's character, where they kind of have like a little flirtation. You know, her son is now going to be playing for the team. And yeah, she basically strikes up a little interest in Fran the Man. So
okay. All right. So, all right. Okay. Who plays Fran the Man?
That is an actor called Dara Humphreys.
Right. From the trailer, it sounds like kind of what it's aiming for is charm, and it's kind of like local hero or one of those kind of types of movies.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of shot mockumentary style. So he actually has a camera crew that are following him around to kind of make a little story about him. And that kind of lends itself with the police asking him for help, because they're like, well, you already have someone filming you all the time, so then we'll have footage of things that you're going to find out. So it's kind of interesting how they were able to interlink sort of those aspects. But it definitely reminded me of, do you remember the film Grabbers, the Irish film Grabbers? No. It's basically, it's like a Irish sci-fi film. And that was kind of like tongue-in-cheek, very Irish, and, you know, some of the jokes hit, some of the jokes missed, and that's kind of what this reminded me of. And that's a film from about 15, 20 years ago. So in the sense of me finding it disappointing, I think it's just because I had my standards set so high, because Irish film has come on so many leaps and bounds. Look, it's not a terrible film. It's just, for me, I just think that there were certain aspects of it that could have been better. Like, there's some certain jokes in there. Like, there's a Nelson Mandela joke that just really didn't land. And you're kind of squirming in your chair going, did I really just hear him say that? And, you know, maybe I was picking it up the wrong way. But at the end of the day, I don't think I'd be the only one that would. So that for me, it was like, you need to have the tone right and not just throw flyaway kind of things like that out into the universe. And the performances, I have to say, like, they were very consistent. They were all, you know, you could tell that there was great chemistry between a lot of the cast, but just the tone and the storyline. And I think also like maybe they had a few like budget limitations because they're building up to a couple of different things that you then kind of don't get to see in the way that you're expecting to see them. And I think that was purely maybe because of like a budget limitation. So, you know, a bit hit and miss, you know, to use a football term.
Hit and miss.
Thank you.
There you go. That joke was funnier than that entire film. Just described, because we don't, and like we don't have to, you know, Irish film has gone past that point where we're saying it's good for an Irish film.
Yeah.
Irish films are good.
They are. They're
full
so
stop.
Good.
So it's kind of behoves any maker to, you know, be of that standard, because the rest of them are for the most part.
Exactly. And I know there's probably people thinking, it's like, oh, maybe you're just not a football fan. It's like, you're right. I do love Ted Lasso. I'd be more of a Formula One fan myself. But like, it's not that I don't have the interest in the sport. So I could get a lot of the sporting references and I could recognise that Brian Kerr was in it and a few of the pundits and things like that. So I got a lot of the Easter eggs, which actually were quite fun to see that they did keep it quite rooted in reality. But just the flow, the story, I did chuckle though at the amount of publicity that Miami Cafe in Dunleary got during the film. I just thought that was gas because I used to love going in there when I was a kid. So shout out to them. Yeah. But yeah, like overall, it was just, you know, like as you said, like Irish film has come on leaps and bounds and it just didn't hit it for me.
Okay, well, that's, you know, that can happen. Someone says there was a short series called Fran the Man about 14 years ago.
Yeah, it was a TV series. And
Maybe it was just, you know, it's been in development hell for the last 14 years.
Maybe it sounds like something that probably could have been done if they wanted to reboot it, like Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Reboot it and do a TV series rather than a film.
Actually, yeah, something a la The Young Offenders would probably work really well for it. Like, adapt it that way, give it a bit more time to percolate.
It's a bit late now, probably. They've made it now.
Try to fix it in post.
Is it kind of like the Snapper or the Van kind of territory for... and you said Dunleary was made, so was it set on the south side?
That is actually a very good question. I can't remember where they said it was set exactly, but they are playing Glass Pool in one of the matches. And then they're talking about Tallaght Stadium and things like that. So maybe it is set on the south side. I don't know, but I had kind of assumed it was north side, but I could be very wrong in that, actually.
Just because he's called Fran the Man?
No, just maybe it's just because I live on the north side now that I think everything revolves
everything
around
should
me.
Be. Yeah.
That's probably true. But it wasn't one of those that, like, they go into Fairview Park and they leave Fairview Park and suddenly they're in.
You probably wouldn't, if you didn't know Miami Cafe, you probably wouldn't have even known it was Dunleary kind of thing. So maybe it was just that they shot it around that area and then based it somewhere else in Dublin. I don't know.
Okay.
I can't remember. I'm very sorry to the people who made it if that was actually answered in the film. I totally missed that point.
Yeah, okay. But you didn't miss all the hilarious jokes, though. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
What was the name of the wine again? A few people have texted in and you swiftly changed the subject.
Cadde Fratti.
Yeah.
Is it? C-A-D-E-I.
Lugana wine.
F-R-A-T-I. And it's called Il Fratti. And it's Lugana is the region.
Right, okay. So Il Frati. That's not the name of the producer. That's the actual name of the
name
wine.
Name of the wine. Yeah,
okay. So there you go. Il Frati. There for people who are interested. Lots of people want to know. They're going to make an English version of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
I say
because Saturday Night Live doesn't seem to work out anywhere outside of America.
Yes.
Like, even when you sit down, I'm a huge SNL fan. But I realised I'm a huge SNL fan in clips, in sound bites.
Yeah.
When I sit down to watch the whole thing, I go, well, we're here for a couple of hours. That clip's not actually, that skit isn't that funny. Like the small skits we see are hilarious, but the whole show itself isn't great. It's a great place to, I mean, it's been going for 50 years. They're doing something right in the States. So it's a great place to develop talent. And they're hoping that they can do the same over in the UK. Lorne Michaels, who has been with the show, created the show back in 1975, is going to come over. Sky is behind it. They're saying this will launch in 2026. The problem is, I was reading a piece in The Guardian, and it's really interesting where The Guardian was saying, do you know what? What hasn't worked in the States is the panel shows that work over here. And what hasn't worked over in the UK is the SNL skit type shows or even the like late night TV chat shows haven't worked in the UK either. So it's the different, I don't think the humour and style of humour really translates well. Like they're saying, the part of the reason it doesn't work as well is because in the UK they have a limited budget, in the US they can throw money at it. So, you know, when you have talent who are starting to take off, they're going, I can go make big buck in the States. And so they leave for the States. So they're hoping that they can get some great talent and some great guests. Like the format is going to be all the same. I don't know. As I said, I think now it works in the States because it's becoming an institution. I think should Lorne have started SNL now, would it have worked? I don't think it would have.
No, I agree.
Because of its history.
Well, I suppose, and the only kind of late night chat show equivalent on this side of the Atlantic really is Graham Norton that works, but he gets most of Hollywood.
Exactly. And a show like that doesn't really work over there. Like when they do their late night TV shows, it's usually just one-on-one. They can't do that whole panel thing that Graham Norton does, and he does it so well and he's so funny.
Yeah. And they seem to get kind of good stories out of people. And it seems less, on the Graham Norton show, I mean, it seems less kind of contrived than it seems on any of the others.
Graham Norton doesn't seem like he's trying to hit his mark. He's just, Graham Norton listens.
Yeah.
Whereas in the States, they're looking at their cue cards. That's two very different ways of interviewing.
Yeah. As someone says, there's a big difference between USA humour and UK Irish humour. If they base the UK SNL along those lines of not the 9 o'clock news, that could work.
Yeah.
Says John, maybe.
I think it's a massive investment from Sky, a risk to take. And I don't know. I'm not that excited by that.
I think we should just set Foyle, Arm and Hog on them. Those three on something like SNL, just let them loose, be gas.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, churning it out week in, week out, that's the difficulty.
Yeah.
And that's why so many of those things kind of are very hit and miss.
And they have a big writer's room. Again, that's where the money comes into it as well, because you have the big writer's room. Mm. You're also going to have guests who are committing to stay with them for a week. And they're willing to do that in the States, but are they going to be willing to do that over in the UK?
And come here, is it actually live? Do they do it live?
They'll have to do it live. Yeah, so it's the whole same premise.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of the few shows that is still live.
Okay.
And they're going to do it live on Sky?
Mm-hmm. It's the whole same premise.
Yeah, and they haven't given any names yet, I suppose.
Not yet. Up and coming talent. But like they've said, they've tried this before, like this skit type show, SNL type show, and it hasn't worked. Back in the 90s, there was one that ran on Channel 4 for, I think, 13 episodes. Ricky Gervais was in it. That sort of got cancelled. His career took off. But they've tried it before. It hasn't worked. So we'll see.
Okay, we will see. Yeah. And there's going to be another season of The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Is this going to be the last? Well, I mean, this season hasn't even started yet.
No, so this season starts on Monday.
Yeah.
This is based on the really popular PlayStation video game. There's part one and part two, right? But the creators have said from day one, we think we need four seasons to tell this story.
Okay.
So season three has already been confirmed. They say the way season two ends is going to be amazing. I've seen the first couple of episodes of season two. I can't say too much. It's got to get quicker and better, I think.
Oh, really? A little bit disappointed in season two?
I can't say. I'm embargoed. I'll tell you off here.
Okay, all right.
But everyone's raving. Do you know what they're saying about season two that I can say? Bella Ramsey, it's all about her, and like Pedro Pascal's amazing, but Bella Ramsey's really coming to the fore. And Caitlin Dever, who if you watch the Australian influencer who said she had cancer.
Yes.
She starred in that she was in Booksmart. She's also going to be in the next series.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's a great cast. And so season three has been confirmed, but season two, if you're looking forward to it, Monday night, Sky, 9 p.m. Sky Max. And if you miss it, you can get it back on now if you've got the package.
And is it like a one a week? Or
it's
the
one
whole
a week.
Thing? Yeah. Okay.
For 9 weeks.
Old fashioned telly.
Yeah.
Is James Corden going to end up hosting the UK SNL every week? Exactly. That could come all could true. Yeah. Apparently they tried it in Spain about 15 years ago. Pure tripe in the end. I agree with the clip theory as well, says another texter.
News Talk's Cash Machine.
There you go. Congratulations to Emma. You'll be getting a new title on the hard shoulder after the 4 o'clock news. Right, so let's toast Emma's success, Linda, with our next wine.
Done. Yeah. Blow it on some nice wine. There you go. I love that. Responsibly, of course. Okay, so this is Bodega Navajas. Okay, I'll spell it N-A-V-A-J-A-S. So people say Navajas. It's
okay.
Navajas. Navajas, not Navajas, okay?
Okay.
And it is 95% Tempranillo and 5% Mazula. And it is one of my absolute favourite wineries from Rioja. I just think they are stunning. Everything they touch, from their entry level all the way up to the Gran Reserva, which I did at a wine tasting yesterday, and they were like, oh my God, which I opened the Gran Reserva yesterday at 12 o'clock and showed it at 8 o'clock last night. It needs time open to breathe. This I opened just before we came in. So it'll just get even nicer and nicer. Sticking, you're like, that is a melody of mixed berry fruit that is just bursting with so much fruit that you want to make jam out of it. Is so good. And the vanilla, so it is from, so the minimum, this is a Rioja Reserva, and the minimum time that you need to legally age a Rioja is for 36 months. Okay, so 1 year must be in oak barrels at least. And this winery have decided to age it in oak barrels, American oak barrels, for 20 months. So they're going beyond that, hand picking the grapes from their best vineyards, the oldest vineyards. And it spends 4 years in bottle before they release it for us to enjoy. And oh my, I just love this. So this, for me, a Rioja Reserva and a Bordeaux are classic wines to have with Easter. Easter lamb, with that gorgeous fattiness of it, with the acidity in this wine, is just beautiful. Controversial, Easter eggs, chocolate. You see,
that's what I was just thinking. I was like, oh my God, how basic am I? I just go straight to the chocolate.
You totally shouldn't be having chocolate and wine. Okay, it's wrong.
Right, the combination is amazing.
I thought you were supposed to have salted chocolate with wine.
Yeah, not
and all that.
Because of the fats and the bitterness and all that. You're not supposed
to. But what if you're having milk chocolate? There's no bitterness in that.
There's no chocolate in it. Yeah. I say go for it. I love a bit of chocolate. Now, my, you know, podcast co-host Antonia, who's Spanish, Antonia Dominguez, would be like, never, ever, ever. It's blasphemy. Unless it's a sweet port. Unless the wine is kind of sweeter. But this, for me, just has that mocha note as well. And the vanilla, it's delicious. Isn't that gorgeous?
It's so funny because I've actually done like a wine and chocolate tasting session before. Yeah. So some groups are like pushing it as opposed to saying no, no.
Yeah, 100%. I want to do that. I want to teach that as well, because I think most people have crisps, have popcorn, have chocolate when they're having wine.
Yes.
So let's just give them nothing too complicated to go, this is, go for it.
Shouldn't it just be... whatever you like. And drink what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In moderation,
pop
obviously.
Over now, you know, a Dairy Milk and... bottle of Blanc.
But that's
great.
What I do.
Yeah.
I do dairy milk. Is that, that's basic, isn't it?
No, but that's fine. But you see, silly things like someone who doesn't like Chardonnay, right? An oaky, buttery Chardonnay. If you have popcorn and put a bit of butter on that, elevation.
Mm-hmm.
Elevation.
No, I totally agree with that because I'm not a Chardonnay drinker, but I would, like, with a buttery bucket of popcorn, sure.
So is the next thing you're going to say to us, you shouldn't put strawberries in your champagne? Oh my God, you're going to say yes.
Do what you want. But yeah, probably. But
the God, the judgment on her face.
Okay, no, if it's an inexpensive something, then go for it. But
no,
real
in a
Moët, proper.
Or in a...
No, proper champagne.
Oh, look at that. A Moët. Sorry, that's only 30 euro a bottle.
It's about 50. No, my go to is Piper and Paul Roger. They would be my two. Every day.
Yes.
Champagne.
Yeah,
always
that's breakfast,
have a bottle in the fridge. Yeah.
And would you put a strawberry in
I wouldn't, no. I'd eat strawberries as well.
We can't go out together.
Okay, I will for you.
Why do they put strawberries in it anyway when you could just like eat the strawberry?
Oh, because then you eat the strawberry after it's been... Look, I feel
Prosecco.
A bit fancy when I put
doused
strawberry.
Doused in champagne. Yeah. All right, okay. I get it now. Because I would, you know, there's a danger.
Do you not
could gag on it if you forget it's there.
You see, because it goes all mushy.
Like, and then you're brought into like, you know, A&E, like gagging on a strawberry. How
Prosecco
embarrassing is
to
that?
To make it taste better, yeah.
Oh. And chocolate all over your mouth.
Yeah. That's. God, that reminds me of a few stories, at least one of which I can't tell on air. Going back to Saturday Night Live, there was the 11 o'clock show, says the texter. Ali G, Ricky Gervais and Alan Partridge.
Yes, that was on...
were all in it.
That was on Channel 4. Channel 4 also had the Saturday Zoo in the 1990s. And apparently in the 1980s, they had Saturday Live. And that included...
It was Friday Night Live.
Yeah, and
Ben Elton was in it. Yeah,
and Tracy Ullman.
Yeah,
like,
I remember
what a
that.
Cast.
Yeah, that was. But they had music in that as well. It wasn't
okay, so
just
it was a mixture.
Yeah, it was kind of more of a mixture of stuff. The difference between American and British Irish humor in the late night shows is that over here it's more organic.
Yeah,
there's a lot more ad lib and no script. That's probably true. And Greg says SNL doesn't work outside the US because it's actually not funny. Especially when, since it went all TDS. We had to look that up. That stands for Trump Derangement Syndrome. So we know where Greg's coming from there. They actually thought Alec Baldwin was funny, says Greg. Didn't he do Trump?
Wasn't he doing Trump?
Yeah,
he
okay. Did, yeah. So obviously
he did a good Trump.
He did. I did. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, Greg's feelings were hurt.
Well, sorry, Greg.
By taking the mickey so of Trump.
Try some champagne and strawberries.
Yeah, we did Trump wine last week here.
Have wine.
He does have wine.
Everything.
Yeah,
yeah, Michelle
and
had that.
Like, in all honesty, what's it like?
It's
a wine
in an expensive bottle, but it's actual trash inside. So it's pretty much what you'd expect.
Does it have any space all over?
It's done in gold with Trump written in big letters.
Didn't she get Michelle got that brought over? From
she
her
did.
Friend
yeah, you can't actually. Yeah. You can't actually buy it in this country. Or if you could, it would cost you like 10 zillion quid with all the tariffs. Alan says, "I've taken advantage of many little known Italian grape varieties over the years. Years ago, someone bought me a bottle of Aglianico. That's the one. It was gorgeous.
See, I said that one.
I know nothing about wine except I like what I like. But ever since, I always I ask people in wine shops or restaurants if they have
Aglianico.
And they automatically assume I know what I'm talking about.
You totally, from A to Z, you could name a load of grapes from Italy alone and people would think, oh, well, they're an expert. Because there's a grape called Monica, Caterato, all of these, mad grapes that you've never heard of from Italy. But Aglianico is a big, rich, full-bodied. I'll bring one in the next time if you want and you can taste one.
Okay.
Well, I can say that without...
Okay, no, you said that very well. That was very impressive. And that's an absolutely lovely wine.
Isn't it? I know.
Say, yeah.
Sorry, I meant to say exclusive to Wine Online, who do nationwide delivery, and it's just everything in their range. In my house all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. And now finally, at last, after huge amounts of public demand for it, a film company's been set up by those two titans of the film industry, Matthew Vaughn and Ronaldo.
Yes. They're two names that go hand in hand. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently they've already worked on three things. Two things are about to come out, but I love them. Now, I don't know if it's youare.marv or your Marv, but basically their aim is, I'm reading straight from the press release, to disrupt conventional filmmaking by embracing innovative technology with a nod to tradition. What I hear there, and hasn't been confirmed, is a lot of AI, I'd say.
Or cheap.
Yeah.
Make it on your phone.
Yeah. So a couple of things are going to come out soon. They're not telling us what. I mean, it's very smart of Ronaldo. He's a very good businessman. Doesn't matter what you think of him as a soccer player. He's an amazing businessman who has thought past, what do I do after football?
Sure.
I thought he probably would have had enough with his YouTube channel and his hotel chain. But no, he's going into media as well.
And has this company actually made anything?
Yeah, it's made two things.
Okay, and what are the two things?
We don't know yet. They're going to unveil it. But Ronaldo has said, this is an exciting chapter for me as I look ahead to new ventures in business. And then Matthew Vaughn, who is a great director, he's actually said, Cristiano has created stories on the pitch that I could never have written, and I look forward to creating inspiring movies with him. He's a real-life superhero.
Okay, so somebody employed somebody to say, try and make it sound like Ronaldo knows something about this, or crowbar some sort of story. Matthew Vaughn, though, was made mostly kind of, is it wrong, action stuff?
Full-on action stuff. I quite like some of his stuff.
Yeah.
Kingsman.
Yeah, and did he do Kick-Ass? No, that wasn't him, was it?
It was him, yeah. He did make Kick-Ass,
so
yeah.
So he's always been one to sort of push the boundaries. So it'd be interesting. I'm not going to criticize or pass remark. Well, I suppose I just did, but I am going to wait until I see what they have produced. Because who knows? It could be something fun and exciting. And I think if we don't embrace new technology, it's going to come along anyway. So better we embrace it and do something fun and innovative with it than be overtaken by it.
Sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, but Ronaldo's just putting up the money. That's what it sounds like.
Of course, but he's got really great stories from the pitch that
he
Matthew
does, yeah.
Vaughn could never
I kick ball, it'd go in net. Right, let's flesh that one out a bit.
He's talking to Fran.
Right, let's go to our second movie of the day. It is The Amateur. Here's a clip.
You surprised me, Charlie. I can't tell you how rare that is, but it ends here. There are no three volley salutes in this work. We're the John Doe's that get found in the dumpster if we get found, which you won't.
those were good lessons. You're a good teacher, Hendo.
I took that into account.
50-50 odds, right? Did you ever account for the things I was good at? Base charge on a timer.
There you go, big explosion at the end of that, whatever that was.
Yeah.
The thing is, the trope that, you know, somebody does something to my family or kid or some member of my family, thus giving me the excuse to do a series of terrible things over the stretch of an hour and a half or 2 hours, is a trope as old as time.
To a certain extent, when you break it down to its bare bones, sure. In this case, what I thought was quite interesting is that it is actually a guy who works for the CIA, but he's in like their like data analysis department. So he's the one that's like decoding all of these like encrypted files and trying to basically get them information that they didn't have previously. And his wife just ends up going to London for a conference and gets embroiled in this hostage situation. And she's one of the two people that gets killed as a result of it. So he only finds out in the middle of work, and they're kind of like, oh, you should like take time off, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, no, I want you to send me after them. I want you to let me get these guys because clearly you're not going to be doing it. And they kind of make a deal with them to do it, but they're kind of like, nah, you know, he might just have an accident in training. He might not actually get to do this. And then suddenly as the bodies start dropping, they realize, oh, we've kind of underestimated this techie. And I just thought that that was such an interesting way of doing it, as opposed to it just being like just your average like spy who's just not very good at his job. It's actually someone who's very good at very particular things, who's still a terrible shot, but he uses all of that to his advantage in order to kind of get his goals. And I thought that was just a very nice way of doing it. It's directed by James Hawes, who actually directed a couple of episodes of Penny Dreadful back in the day. He also did the name of the film escapes me, the Anthony Hopkins one where he'd gotten all the children out of Germany.
I would say One Day, but it's not.
One Day, it is.
It is One Day?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, it's a lovely, lovely film. So really good guy behind the helm. And I actually worked with him on Penny Dreadful. So I know there were certain camera angles in it, like a bit of the cinematography where I was like, oh, that's definitely a James Hawes specialty there. One slight criticism of the cinematography, though, is that there was a lot of Steadicam used, especially during some of the very few fight sequences that were actually in it. It kind of just made it a little bit jumbled, so you couldn't really see what was going on. A nice little dolly shot wouldn't have gone amiss there. But overall, I was actually pleasantly surprised. With these films, they can be so hit and miss, as you said, like they're a trope as old as time, but this just had a little bit of extra zhuzh that I thought just made it that bit more interesting than your average spy thriller.
Okay. All right. Sounds like, yeah. Is it worth going to a cinema for?
Honestly, yeah, because they've shown a bit of it in the trailers, but there's a really epic sequence involving a rooftop swimming pool. That is actually one of the coolest things you'll ever see. And that on the big screen, like it really has a lot of impact in that sense. But if you've seen the clip, you know what I mean by that. But I think it does deserve the cinema trip. But like 3.5 stars, I think, overall. It's just that little bit long. Just that little bit long. A little heavier edit, I think it would have been much better. But overall, yeah, okay. I was more pleasantly surprised with it.
So does most of the action take place in London or where?
All over Europe, actually.
Okay, so
he's kind of chasing them down and he kind of hops. Now, of course, there's a little bit of movie logic going on here.
Yeah.
Like, you can just get to Turkey from France in the space of an hour. It's like, no,
of course
you can't.
You can, yeah.
You can Google this and you'll get the exact result you want. No, you can't. I've tried the new Gemini system.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I don't know how people will feel about this. They're at least talking about making a second season of Adolescence.
Yeah, I don't understand how, but Brad Pitt's company, Plan B, are looking at it going, they've like...
Who were involved in this series.
Well, yeah, they were involved in, excuse me, apparently, well, not apparently, they did. Brad Pitt worked with Stephen Graham before, and after everyone at his company had also seen Boiling Point, which Stephen Graham acted in, and it was also one shot, they loved all of that. They helped them in that they helped them get to Amazon. Amazon, I didn't know this. Amazon said no to Adolescence.
Ha! That's why it's dying on its arse,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. They said no to Adolescence, and then they took it to Prime. to Netflix. Sorry. Who eventually said yes, but they're saying they sort of want to do, you know, they tell stories that have a social conscience. They want to do something that's a social conscience. They don't want to repeat the same story. I think what they do like is that one shot thing. I'm hoping that's what they're focusing on, because a lot of people are right, and rightly so, are saying, why is another season necessary? When you do stuff like this, when you go, okay, we just want to do, that was really successful, let's do something else. What ends up happening is it diminishes the success of the first one. And so I'm hoping that they just leave adolescence be what it is and then try and do something else that's creative and innovative and gets people talking.
Yeah, I think probably the people who made Adolescence, and that includes Graham, that they were so invested in that I don't think they would let that happen. They might do something else, tackle some other issue and maybe do it the same way. But still, be interesting if they do agree to do something like that. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Serena, Olivia and Linda.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.